Welcome to my Caucasian home.
Oh my God.
Talented audience. Show stopping.
What?
Absolutely.
Spectacular.
My name is Ekaterina Petrovna Zamochkova.
Yeah, big gay out.
But you can call me Katya.
Diverse representations of trans people in the media, I think, are so important.
I guess I just look different.
Sing it!
I am proud to be gay.
Sing the fucking song!
Well, all right. If you insist, I'll sing my song.
Yeah.
Song.
No one stops me.
Gay Panic with Jack and Jake.
My machine. What's mine? I drifted, shaping.
Ow. Wow.
And out of the budget comes the gayest show in town. It is Gay Panic on 2SER 107.3 with myself, Jack, and my lovely second person who also does the show and rocks up sometimes.
2IC, I see.
Jake.
Hi, how are you?
I am grand. I'm really good.
Have you had a great week since last week's show?
I've had an awesome week. And do you know what's been really great about this week?
What?
The budget.
Oh my God, I love that theme.
Kidding, of course. basically, what happened, nothing really that interesting.
Yeah.
But one of the things that relates specifically to our show, because we do talk about all things sex, sexuality, and gender diversity, is Tanya, old mate Tanya, who
Mrs. Plibersek
found out sounds a little bit like Pauline Hanson if you don't see her and just listen to her.
I feel like she'd take offense.
She probably would. But she put up on her Facebook that there has been some money that was hidden away in last night's budget, as in the 8th of May last night. that was $170 million for funding to fund another plebiscite, which nothing has been confirmed, so obviously we can't say anything, but basically that's what she said. So it'll be interesting to see if they do try and push for another plebiscite, considering that it was basically pushed away, that it was voted down in government. So
wouldn't it be a slap in the face for her to realise that she'd actually misread and there was, in fact, $170 million coming Mrs. Plibersek's way? And she's like, oh, I'm so silly. I'm actually getting $170 million for whatever venture I want to go down. So we'll keep you posted with that as that rolls out. Probably into next week's show as well. We'll continue to see more and more budget stuff make its way onto your airwaves. But we've got a packed show tonight.
We do have a jam-packed show. We are going to be chatting to Melbourne artist who is putting on a show at the moment in Melbourne's Laneways. Oh, it brings me back.
You're from there. You're not there anymore. You live in Sydney. You made the decision to move, so don't complain about it.
Really good performance space down in Flinders Street, just underground in the Campbell Street Arcade. And basically, it is a pop-up sort of gallery, and they've been utilising that space more and more. And now it's actually pretty populated and popular for people to go and check out as well. And so Indigenous artist Peter Wapples-Crow is going to be joining us on the line to talk about his exhibition that's going down there at the moment, The Dirty Dingo.
And as always, we are 7 episodes into season 9 of RuPaul's Drag Race. Jack and Jake's RuPaul Ruvisian will be coming on a little bit later. That's where we kind of go into the episode of the wonderful program that is RuPaul's Drag Race, kind of dissect exactly what went down, who excelled, who really fumbled over their heels and fractured their skull off the main stage of Drag Race.
Spoiler alert.
Oh,
watch
no.
Out.
Unfortunately, that didn't happen.
No.
We are at a bit of a lapse in terms of seeing like cattiness and bitchiness, which you will have heard Jack and I, if you are regular listeners, moan about week on, week off. Previous seasons have held some sort of, you know, iconic shady moment or iconic bitchy moment. We're getting glimpses, but we'll fill you in on that all a bit later.
Yeah, we need the Laganja Estranja breakdown. We need a Fifi O'Hara sort of character to rear its ugly head.
Yeah.
We need an Alaska meltdown from All Stars Season 2.
I'll put $10,000 into your PayPal.
Something like that would be good. I also had a chat with Jennifer Crute on the line from San Francisco to chat about the untold tales of Armistead Maupin. If you don't know who he is, you will after the interview. He's actually, I had no idea who he was, but he's an incredibly influential man who lives in the United States and was one of the main players of the gay rights movement in San Fran, and in his own way contributed to it through his writing in the San Francisco Chronicle newspaper.
He sounds like a real character as well. And what I've gathered from the chat as well is he was involved with such a weird array of celebrity or celebrity star-like figures, even politicians too, that he somehow found himself to be acquainted with. So kind of like a seed in a haystack, a needle, a seed in a haystack,
as they all say, yeah, which I imagine would expression. Also, I imagine that would also be quite difficult to find.
I feel like it would be even harder to find, especially if it's like a sesame seed, which is the same color as hay.
Yeah, but I would probably prefer to reach into a haystack looking for a seed as opposed to a needle, because then, oh, you don't know, maybe seeds are dangerous. That's why I stay away from seeds and all food-like products. That's why I keep so gorgeously thin and toned.
Just absorbing oxygen and drinking water every now and then.
I'm a photosynthesizer, and that's all I need.
That's good. It's great that that's how you get your energy. next, we are going to be joined on the line to talk Dirty Dingo, which is going down in Melbourne, but we're going to jump into some tunes. Also, oh my God, it's Eurovision. Should we start it with a Eurovision song?
So is it next week that it kicks off, or is it this week?
Are you
week?
Kidding me?
I don't follow it.
Wow. Whoa. Okay. So it's like the
I guess that's
music
the end of the program.
Yeah. I'm going to just play Eurovision songs for 45 minutes. Okay. No, Eurovision has begun. Live semi-final one has happened.
I mean, like, the actual spectacular vernacular event that is the Eurovision proper grand final. When exactly does that happen? That's on the 18th of May. Am I incorrect?
You're incorrect. So
great. Well, I'm giving people the wrong date, so don't look out on that date for Eurovision.
The final is this Sunday night. You can, or Sunday morning, rather, at 5 a.m. is when you can get up and watch it live on your television. Semi-final one has already happened, and semi-final two has also already happened. That's where they will go from, say, 24 countries each, and they'll whittle them down so that you only have, I think, a maximum of about 20 or something in the final, or maybe a lot more. I don't know. I'm making stuff up. Okay. And Australia made it through. Spoiler alert.
Yep. Isaiah
Firebrace, who also fell a little bit
short
of his performance.
Short of his performance.
Yeah.
There were a couple of fumbles. I actually saw it on the news this morning that they were doing coverage of that. But nevertheless, he's still got another performance to go.
He does. So he's got a chance to redeem himself. And all of it usually will be based on their performance in the grand final. So hopefully he gets to work on his vocal cords. He's also such a tiny little person. Like, I only realized that. This coming from a fellow tiny little person.
Yeah.
He's just so slender as well. And I feel like if I blew on him, he would fly away with my breath, because he's so slender and he must just be so light. He's also quite short, and to command a stage and have that amount of presence would be a really daunting thing. So I think maybe his nerves just got to him a little bit in that first semi-final.
Regardless, I did see kind of a glimpse of his performance, and anybody who gets up on a stage of that magnitude and, you know, opens their mouth to sing some sort of song, you've got to give kudos to. So good luck to you. And I guess you'll keep all of us posted, because what happens in Eurovision just tends to seep from your pores, Jack.
Oh, yeah.
And wherever I am or wherever you are, I can smell your excitement for Eurovision.
I'm probably going to do like a wrap-up of Eurovision, so that'll be something to look forward to next week. And I'll make that promise now and then break it later, just so that you're prepared for that.
You'll just sing a song for us.
Exactly. I'm going to sing Blanche's song, which we're going to have a listen to now. This is City Lights, and it's actually a young lady performing. A lot of people thought it was a man.
Yeah, actually, but it's a cool song. I like it. A bit of a bit more like an indie vibes. Getting some Halos vibes, actually, on this track a little bit.
Getting some London Grammar, too.
Mm. You're on Gay Panic on 2SER.
107.3.
Jack and Jake.
Gay Panic.
On the radio.
All alone in the flame of doubt. Are we going to lose it all? I could never leave you in the city lights. I could never beat the storm in your eyes, the storm in your bright eyes. All alone in the danger zone. Are you ready to take my hand? All alone in the flame of doubt. Are we going to lose it all? Love came in between the space and the city light. All we are is you. The stars in your eyes, the stars in your dark eyes. All alone in the danger zone. Are you ready to take my hand? could sound like a tune for lies, but keep the stone that's in your eyes. Let's move some light into the light. All alone in a danger zone, are you ready to take my hand? All alone in a flame of doubt, are we going to lose? All alone, the flame of doubt. Are we going to lose it all? To lose it all? To lose it all?
Just Words was 2SER's first original podcast series, looking at Section 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act, and that's a part of the law that makes it illegal to offend, insult, humiliate, or intimidate someone based on their race. We spoke to the people who have used 18C and the people who have had it used against them. Just Words is now wrapped, and you can catch up on all the episodes and podcast extras. Search for Just Words on iTunes or your favourite podcast app. Stay tuned for even more original podcast series from 2SER 107.3.
Gay panic on 2SCR.
Don't scream into it. It's like speak over it like that.
Don't panic.
I said don't panic. Yeah, why? Why?
Gay panic on 2SCR.
Good.
That was a track that you heard from the Eurovision Song Contest, which is the most important song contest in the world. And how dare Jake not know about it? Oh, my gosh.
Well, I feel like I know something about it, but in terms of my actual passion towards it, I hand the reins over to you. But I'll enjoy it for you.
Yes.
Well, on your behalf. Well, actually, no, I don't even need to because you're going to have a great time this weekend.
I mean, I'm going to enjoy it myself.
Are you waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to watch it?
Oh, yeah, I am. Absolutely. 1,000%.
Great.
Yeah, it's definitely happening.
You're listening to Gay Panic here with Jack and Jake on 2SCR 107.3. Now, art is one of the most personal mediums someone can use to express themselves, and it can take something that an artist feels and translate it so that everyone can understand its meaning. Peter Waples Crowe knows how to do this better than most, and as an artist of whom is both Aboriginal Australian and a member of the LGBT community, Peter has a unique perspective which he uses to create his art.
A Narigo man from Tumbarumba, I really should have looked at that pronunciation before I went to say it, in southern New South Wales. Peter has felt like somewhat of an outsider in what he perceives as a very heterocentric culture. As such, he adopted the dingo as a motif, feeling that the much-loathed animal and himself have lots in common. Peter is on now to talk us through his work, including the current exhibition, which is in Melbourne at the moment. Peter, thank you so much for jumping on the line and chatting to us on Gay Panic tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really love the title of the show.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, it is a bit of a reference to the Gay Panic Defence, which is, funnily enough, still a thing, I think.
In some states.
Yeah. Pretty,
yeah, we've got to get rid of that.
Yeah, hopefully eventually. I think they've been lobbying for it over the past, but for some reason, maybe because it hasn't been used in such a long time, it's just one of the ones that's been kept for a long time. Anyway,
yeah, it'd be good to see it go.
Gay panic aside, let's jump into your work. I want to know first off how identifying as gay and Indigenous has influenced your art.
How that influences my art? Or?
Yes.
Well, I'm a Narigo person, so we're the snow people, so we come from the Snowy Mountains area. But I've always been drawn to Aboriginal culture, and I work in it, and I've lived in it, and worked in health and well-being in it. And I guess I've always been trying, like some of my early role models, Aboriginal artists are Gordon Bennett and Tracy Moffat from the 80s, and we got Tracy Moffat in the Venice Biennale this year as the Australian rep. But a lot of those artists like fought around that label of what Aboriginal is, and I'm always constantly fighting that too because, you know, I'm an Aboriginal person, so all my art is Aboriginal art. But then, you know, most of Australia thinks Aboriginal art is dot art or from the deserts or something like that. So, yeah, Yeah, and I think just the queer stuff then comes out because I'm really influenced by, I was influenced by David Warren Aravich, an AIDS activist artist from New York in the 80s as well. So, yeah, so I've just got many influences, and AIDS activism art was one of them as well. So, yeah, I sort of combined to produce things. And I've just been working a lot around dingoes, like you mentioned in the before, in the introduction.
Yeah, and because I feel like also we kind of said there that, you know, the dingo is an animal that I guess some people have preconceived notions about, but it's also an animal that is misunderstood. Why is it one that you kind of gravitated towards with this latest exhibition?
I've always just sort of done dogs in my work. And when I was younger, people called me Wolf as well. So some people still do. It's like a nickname. So I've always done dogs and stuff in my work. It's just that I didn't sometimes you don't know. As I've grown into it, you know, I've come to understand that the dingo is mostly unprotected. We've got a huge dingo fence across the country that stops dingoes getting into the southeast of the country, which is my country. I see it as this metaphor for a second class sort of native, like it's not protected like our other natives, like the koalas and the kangaroos, because it's seen as a pest to white progress, like to agriculture and farming and stuff like that. So it just comes, well, it just has a lot of metaphoric meaning to me in my own position as well, seen as a bit of a pesty in the way queer guy or something, you know? Aboriginal guy.
Have you felt like that in the past? Like you are pushing some or trying to obviously fight for your rights. Do you feel like you're a pest or do you feel like you're obviously making change and standing up for something that you believe in?
Oh, no, I really feel like I'm, you know, I think things have changed a lot in my time, but, you know, I haven't had the easiest ride and the easiest life, and I've been hurt a lot because of my gay identity. So, you know, I guess I'm now at a stage where I'm just entering, you know, I'm over 50 now. So I don't know, you come into this role of like, what's an elder, what's a queer elder, what do we need? And we need more role models in the Aboriginal community, strong queer role models as well. And into that, I think young people need some queer elders as well, you know, to look up to. There's too much suicide and too much questioning when you're young, and yeah, I just don't want young people going through that anymore, you know. I just want them not to take their lives or feel so sad about that aspect of their life and just celebrate it. And we have a few debates in the community about, you know, what was it like before colonial times and stuff like that, but in the end it doesn't matter. We're here now and the community needs to deal with us and accept us, you know.
Mm. And a lot of the time, you know, well, intrinsic to the nature of art is somewhat the political as well. And I guess seeing how far we have or have not in certain regards progressed as a society, do you see that your art kind of swims with the times as well and co-evolves in that sense?
Yeah, no, I think it has. You know, I think I've been trying to find my voice for a long time, and it's taken me a long journey. I wasn't raised in the Aboriginal community. I was part of the adoption movement in the 50s and 60s, and so I grew up. That's why I've got a double barrel name. I grew up with the Wakels, who I love dearly as well, but they're a non-Indigenous family. But, you know, I've been on this incredible journey back home, you know, to find out exactly who I am. And so a lot of my life's been totally about my identity, and all my art's pretty, I say, auto-ethnographic, sort of been based on my own personal experiences and stuff. I don't do things that are abstract to me. I do things that I've experienced, I think, and can comment on. Yeah.
It must be such a huge journey too, because as you say there, it's focusing on identity, and identity is something that you have no shortage of, and what you want to choose to identify as, I think, obviously, as a queer man, as an Indigenous man, and then also as a man who grew up in a white family too. It would have had so many different times within that journey of where you felt like you belonged. Do you feel like you are constantly progressing, I think, through that and finding different identities and maybe feeling that you belong more towards one than the other, or how do you juggle that?
Well, you know, recently I've been more like, I really lean towards Aboriginal spirituality, you know, like that we're connected, that everything is connected, all the animals connected. My personal totem is the crow, you know. So, you know, when the way I stay mindful is, you know, just watching out for those crows and realizing that they're going to have a good day. And, you know, in other ways, I've been trying to call in the light. You know, I have my share of living in the night, in the nightclubs, and I just felt lost for a lot of times. But, you know, I've needed to find that piece. The Aboriginality was a really key piece, you know, and it's really important for me now to be accepted in that community as a queer man, you know. So, and that's, I'm just feeling that's where my calling is now. That's where my passion is, and that's what I want to do. And, you know, I want my art to be reflective of that. So,
And that's something that you are working with at the moment, obviously becoming a queer elder. What is the, what do you want to get out of that? And what do you hope that people can gain from that of having someone to look up to as a queer Aboriginal man?
Well, I think there's a few role models around and more, and, you know, down here in Melbourne, we're in the middle of it went towards the end of the Yirrumboy Festival, but it's had quite a queer bent to it. So here's an Aboriginal festival with a queer bent, you know, and Jacob Boehm, who's been the director, is a queer guy as well. So it's been nice to have a different take on indigeneity as well. Sometimes, you know, when we were colonized, we were seen as, I guess, you know, a lot of our queerness was written out because it was written by Christians and missionaries, and we didn't really speak as Aboriginal people of our own history, and we were homogenized into one group when we're such a diverse group of people. Like I said, I'm snow people, and other people are desert people, other people are rainforest people, saltwater people. So, yeah, I mean, I think some of that still plays out. I think people need to broaden their scope about what Aboriginal art is and what an Aboriginal person is. And, there's all different stories about, I've always tried to find out what it was like before in the old times. And, you know, some people have made special uncles, and hopefully that's what I get to be called. A lot of the young queer kids call me uncle, and a lot of people are calling me uncle these days. So that's really sort of jarring, but it's fun as too. It's really respectful. So it's nice.
In terms of going back to your art, Peter, you're currently exhibiting Dirty Dingo in Melbourne, I believe. But in terms of, I guess, that crossing state boundaries as well, do you have any plans or any stuff coming up in the near that's kind of venturing around Australia for anyone who might come and want to see your art?
Yeah, I have a WordPress site, so people can go and check out that. That's peterwaplescrow.wordpress.com, and yeah, Peter Waples Crow is all one word, so that's cool. You can go and have a look on that, and I usually blog what I'm doing. I had a website, but it's just come down, and I might have to re-put one up again. The little while I've been focused in Melbourne, but I did have a show earlier in the year in Good Looking at Broomalley Art Gallery, so I had a piece in that, which was a queer show for Mardi Gras, which was nice. And the next show, the one in Melbourne's on for 2 months, so that'll be nice if people get to the Campbell Arcade or the De Grey Street subway entrance. So it's hidden downstairs, and it's all in lit window boxes. So it's interesting that it's underground as well. And even tomorrow, I don't know, people around in Melbourne, there's a band that I perform in called The Treaters, and we're playing tomorrow. And you'd have to say they're quite queer. So, yeah, it's not a band. It's more like performance art. So it's just another avenue for things. And it really helped me in downtime to do performance, and it's something I've never done before. So, yeah.
And you've also got a show that's happening with Megan Evans, Squatters and Savages, at the Art Gallery of Ballarat, which is going on from the 27th of May to July 16. What themes are you exploring in that exhibition?
What themes are coming up? Well, what I was asked to do was revision their colonial collection. So these are pictures of Aboriginal people drawn by white people in the colonial era. And I've revisioned them into contemporary scenarios, and just making comments on history and our role and how we were seen as savages and just all these other comments. So it's a show about revisioning that one as well. So I'm a very, pretty much, like, I really like collage, and so I do a lot of collage stuff as well. Yeah, and I've just been working with some kids down here at Backer, and we've got a laneway in the city in Royal Lane as well. It's called Totem Now. And then I was working with some beautiful Tunnerong people on a project that's at Black Dot Gallery down in Sydney, off Sydney Road. So people can have a look around. And, yeah, I do collaborations as well, and I really enjoy them. I've been doing ceramic dingoes for Craft Victoria, so people can go online and have a look at that stuff. I've got cups there and a gold ear black dingo spirit, it's called. Yeah.
Wonderful.
We'll go online to Craft Victoria as well.
We'll make sure to put some of those links up onto our website as well, which is 2scr.com. And you can just go through to Gay Panic and hopefully keep our listeners posted in terms of when you make it to Sydney, hopefully in the near future. But Peter, thank you so much for your time this evening.
No worries. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it. Take care.
Thanks,
you too.
Peter.
And a big love and hug to all the mob who are listening. Everyone else.
Thanks, right, Peter.
Thank you.
That is Peter Waples-Crow, who you can go down and check out his exhibition, Dirty Dingo, in Melbourne. At the moment, it is down at the Campbell Arcade. It is, as Peter said, a really awesome little art gallery space of light boxes, and his artwork is adorning all of the walls along there. If you want to check him out in Ballarat as well, which is regional Victoria, it's about 1.5 hours out of Melbourne. You can go to Art Gallery of Ballarat, and he's got a show up there with Megan Evans, Squatters and Savages, from the 27th of May. But as Jake said, we'll stick all of those links up on the website, 2scr.com. Just go through to Gay Panic. You can have a listen back to this interview and also have a look at the links that we stick up there, maybe to Peter's website, to the WordPress one, so you can see his latest works.
Wonderful. You're on Gay Panic here with Jack and Jake on 2SER. We're going to do a RuPaul's Revision coming up very shortly, but just before we do that, we're going to play some tunes for you.
And this one is from Ellie X. It's a brand new track from her. What do we think about it?
It's got... Ellie X has, like, I feel like two sides in terms of she can do, like, a little bit of an extreme Anna Wise-esque pop track.
Mm-hmm.
This one's probably going back more to the generic side, but is there anything wrong with being generic? I guess if you're depending about a product or a person.
I'll have to think about that one. You're on Gay Panic.
Can't pretend, don't pray, won't come true. I don't, you And work the shaft. Cradle the balls and work the shaft. Sing it with me. Cradle the balls.
Gay Panic on 2SER. Where we get a computer to promo our show so a volunteer doesn't get sued for this.
Cradle the balls and work the shaft.
Family in Carolina, so far away, but she says I remind her of home. Feeling oh so far from home. She never saw herself as a West Coaster. Moved all the way 'cause her grandma told her towns better swim before you drown. Situation gets into parties without invitations. How could you ever turn her down? There's not a drink that I think could sink her. How would I tell her that she's all I think about?
It's Harry Styles, and
that was Harry Styles.
Yeah, it's like, was it actually Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros? Was it actually Father John Misty, as you said before?
Yeah,
it's definitely drawing some similarities to that sort of Bob Dylan era of rock before he went to the electric guitar. But hey, you know, it's fun, it's pop, and I'm pretty sure he's a millionaire.
Yeah, he's got a lot of money, and I'm going to get some of it.
And you also heard from Ali X, who's maybe not a millionaire, but she's French-Canadian, and Paper Love is the name of that tune.
Desperately seeking that paper. Are we seeing that, maybe?
Oh, paper, as in, like, green money, like money.
I would imagine so. Or maybe she's just a real environmentalist, and she's like, no more paper, let's just keep the trees.
True, but wouldn't it be, like, tree love?
I guess so. I guess we're probably going to have to ask her when she comes on next week, whoa, which she isn't doing. But that's a call out to you, Alix, if you're around and listening to the program, which I imagine she would as a French comedian listening to an Australian radio show.
I'm pretty sure she is 1,000% listening. Like, yeah. I have it in pretty good source.
Yeah.
You
never go wrong with your percentages.
No, 100%.
You are listening to Gay Panic with Jack and Jake here on 2SER. And now it's that time of the week. It's Jack and Jake's RuPaul Revision. This time, Season 9, Episode 7. Literally sipping on that tea.
Should just have tea every segment.
Chai tea.
Well, I'm wearing a cup, so I've got a bit of shade on my face.
I thought you said I'm wearing a C cup.
I am as well.
I'm good. For some weird reason I'm getting, I don't know, I think it might be your jacket, the crackling. Maybe you want to take that off.
Oi. Winter's day, it's a cold season. So noisy. That's the radio acoustics.
There you go.
Episode 7, RuPaul's Drag Race. It's weird to think that we're pretty much halfway through the season already. It's gone so quickly.
Yeah, it's huge, but I am very excited because it means less girls, more to the good stuff.
Yeah.
And more competition as well. They're realizing that now it's becoming competition, and I think maybe some of those friendships that we're forming are also going to start to break soon.
Alexis Michelle finally won a challenge. Girl, watch out, because she is going to make it me. She's going to make it the Alexis show.
But I do want something like a Laganja Estranja breakdown. I want a moment in the room where someone feels as if they're attacked.
This is just too fucking much. You broke me down. I feel like shit. I look stupid. God, this fucking sucks.
And I feel like Nina Bernina is the person to do that for me, because she is the most probably unstable mentally of all of the girls. She just is not confident in herself, even though now she says she is. And I think all the other queens have said that time and time again, and they've given her enough hall passes now to the point where no more passes for you. We're not going to congratulate you to your face, because you don't need building up anymore, because you are amazing. And she is.
Ow! Ow!
You gotta do it like a Band-Aid.
And I guess the equivalent that we're seeing in terms of shadiness or just a little bit of bitchy action is coming from some of the younger queens in the form of whinging. We've got Pharamone, who's just kind of like a whiny queen.
You guys, who am I?
I need to smoke. Why? You can never wear enough highlighter.
Although I did enjoy her this episode and thought that she did a decent job. But Aja as well. So for the main challenge, it was essentially Beverly 90210 Ho. It's kind of a parody of the show from the 90s. They even had Tori Spelling and another actor who was part of the show. I never watched it, so I don't remember her name.
Jenny Gar.
It was embarrassing. Tori Spelling and this woman who...
Jenny Gar.
We don't remember. I don't remember her name either.
Jenny Gar.
But we're sitting up there, obviously, as the girls come in. They're all prepped and prepared. They've read their script. They're coming in as actors to perform the scene. Tori Spelling and said other woman...
Jenny Gar.
...are there as the directors. And they are just, like, loving themselves sick. Like, ooh, I love that, like, when I did this, and, like, throwback to that funny little comment about 90210 that no one knows because no one really watched the show in Australia in my generation.
Yeah, very true.
And it's so hard to keep up with that kind of witty comments. Also, Tori Spelling, I feel so bad for her. I feel like she is just at the end of her tether. She had that reality show, like, about her and her husband and children or whatever.
Yeah, and she also had a botched boob job, didn't she?
Yeah, I think she had a botched face job as well, because she is looking really deflated at the moment and probably trying to hang on to any last glimpse of fame that is possible. And
ooh.
I know, cutting into her.
Yep.
I feel bad for her, though. I think she needs to get some sort of self-realization and stop comparing herself to others and maybe other people. She was famous. She's one of those I was famous. She's a Shannon Doherty, is that her name?
And Shannon Doherty was in Beverly 2.
Oh,
Beverly
was she?
2, Beverly 90210 as well. That was who Nina Bonina was being, because you heard the kind of ode to when they were at their draguation of, she's like,
I'm out of here. I'm going to go play a witch on Charmed.
Wow. Because Shannon Doherty was in that show. But to go back to the actual challenge itself, you're right.
very Americanized sitcom. A lot of the actual references were kind of lost on me. The real thing that I was just looking for was any kind of like kitschy, funny stylings from any of the queens, which I think we did get a bit of here and there. Trinity Taylor killing it once again.
I love hot dogs
too. Mom, what are you doing here?
Senior year. I'm so excited. And prom is coming. Mom.
Absolutely nailed it. She was playing the obsessed mom of the teenage girl who just wanted to be included and have fun with all of her friends. But she totally played up that part. And I think a little bit maybe true to Trinity Taylor's self as well, being the cooler older gal.
I'm addicted to speed too.
No, you're not.
No, you're not. Mom! Mom!
The whole thing, she was really a scene stealer, as Michelle Visage said.
She was Jennifer Coolidge to a T. Like, I was getting Jennifer Coolidge Legally Blonde the first and second. Sasha Velour was also like this weird, butchy lunch lady. I was about to say drug lady, although she was drinking alcohol at the time.
We all gotta die of something.
But not before I lose my virginity.
Then you go to Shea Coulee, who was the, I don't know, she was like a grandma who was trying to pass as a senior because it's very tongue-in-cheek and she was pregnant. And she really played up that weird campy character as well, which I thought the whole scene was a little bit scattershot.
I was going to say, the judges were loving Shea Coulee's performance, and so were a lot of other people. I didn't like it.
You just don't like old people. Like, yeah. Tori Spelling.
Yeah, well, I hate old people. We've established that. I'm 12, so I have a right to do so.
Jenny Garth!
Someone else who I didn't think played their role particularly well was Aja.
Yeah, because I'm Bethany Glamber Gleason, and I'm the new bitch in this school.
She's also been a little bit lackluster this season for me. She was one of the queens who really had a hype around her before the season had started.
Huge.
If we go back to a couple of episodes ago, talking about social media queens who really kind of build up a presence and a name for themselves via things like pretty much like Snapchat and Instagram, probably Instagram more so, really kind of favored for her look. A lot of comparisons to Naomi Smalls, who made it to top three last season. So I think a lot of people were like, ooh, she's a really good lip syncer. She's really got like an interesting look. She kind of looks like on trend right now, given that we just saw Naomi last season. They're like, oh, she could be, you know, the protege, essentially. But she's just, I don't think really hit the nail on the head. She's kind of coasted through, in my opinion. And this episode really exemplifies that. So we do get to the main stage and we've seen the challenge play out.
And now we go to the bottom three, Sasha, Aja and Nina. Sasha is safe, and so it's Nina and Aja in the lip sync.
Good luck and don't fuck it up.
What was the song they did the lip sync to?
Finally, CC Pedestin, the best like lip sync song you could ever have.
And the lip sync was okay. Like it was good in parts.
I feel like Aja was doing a lot of things. Aja, for her lip sync talents that she puts on YouTube, it's pretty clear that maybe she's only really good at lip syncing when she has a lot of time to prepare and has a song that fits Aja. I don't think she can blend into these disco songs, these classic drag songs.
That's exactly what I was thinking as well. You've got her doing FKA Twigs. You've got her even doing like Look At Me Now by Chris Brown, these kind of very modern, extravagant songs that don't really fit the mold of a lot of the lip sync tracks on Drag Race. Like, a lot of them do harken back to 70s, 80s disco anthems, I guess diva anthems. And when she was lip syncing Holding Out for a Hero by Bonnie Tyler a couple of weeks ago, it was good, but it just wasn't Aja.
We ended up going with Nina Benina Brown, which I think is the right decision in the end.
Nina Benina Brown, Shantae, you stay.
Nina Benina still, I think, has a lot to show us and probably needs to grow a little bit more as well.
Yeah.
Whereas Aja definitely took on all of the comments from the judges and has adjusted. You can see her makeup from the show and is probably going to go on to use that later in her career and really, I think, gain some massive lessons from it.
If you want to have a listen to any of our other Ruvisions, just jump onto ser.com, find Gay Panic in your program guide, and they'll all be up there.
Enjoy them, you f***head.
You know what I'm talking about? Next. She likes sipping white wine when she feeling philosophical. She likes sipping white wine and speaking metaphor. She be like, life is like a box of chocolates, so just take your pick. You won't know until you take a bite, each taste you gonna get. She likes sipping white wine when she feeling philosophical. She told me she dreams of neon and does yoga by the beach. She told me she lives on quinoa, yeah, man, she don't eat red meat. She told me she met the devil when she ate that LSD. She told me she's seen the future and there's plenty room for me. That bitch is next, next. She looking next, next. That bitch is on deck. She be like, grass is always greener if you stuck on one side. Baby's common sense is hard to fence and get up in my life. She likes sipping wild wine when she feeling philosophical. She told me she read the news because she likes to forward think. She told me she got a sexy friend and we can be free. She told me she don't wear Calvin's cause that pussy gotta breathe. She told me she's seen the future and it's plenty room for me. That bitch is next, next.
A track from Boyfriend, and it is good. It's called Next.
Thank you, mine.
You're on Gay, Gay Panic on 2SER 107.3 with Jack and Jake. It's all about sex, sexuality, and gender diversity.
And history. What started as a fictional column in a San Francisco newspaper in 1976 has evolved into a documentary showcasing a melting pot of LGBTQ characters and the notion of how we, as queer people, can sometimes choose our own family.
The Untold Tales of Armistead Maupin tells the story of one of the world's most beloved storytellers who, hailing from a conservative background in the United States South, became a formidable figure in the gay rights movement.
The film chronicles the life of Army, who, as you'll hear from director Jennifer Crute, led an interesting life, to say the least, and was acquainted with some of the biggest figures of the last 5 decades.
I caught up with Jennifer to talk how the film resonates with those who aren't within the LGBTIQPCA community. And this is what she had to say.
I think everybody feels different or alone about something about themselves, and there's something that they long for and in some kind of connection to other people. And I think many people of all different genders and identities and orientations would long for some type of acceptance among peers and friendships and different types of relationships. So I think everybody knows what it feels like. And I think what's beautiful about what Olympia says is at first it starts a little less politically correct, it seems, but she redeems herself because she learns through her experience of playing this trans character. It's really amazing to see where she was coming from. I mean, she's obviously a smart, caring, liberal, progressive, you know, person who knows very little about trans people when she gets this role. She's honest about that. And she, you know, is surprised to hear the humanity that they would want, long for this human connection with someone. But yeah, that makes sense to me. And yeah, it's touching when she says it. I think she's very sincere. I think she's very honest. And I appreciated that she was willing to kind of let it out and tell a story that starts a little politically incorrect.
Scattered throughout the film too, I think we get an idea of a yearning for one's youth and a yearning for an old San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Do you think San Fran is better off now than it was then? I'm looking more specifically, mm-hmm. I think, at the gay rights movement, in the fact that now people are so widely accepted, mm-hmm. and it's become such a normalcy almost and such an accepted part mm-hmm. of society that it seems less exciting. I think there was that idea that it's just become mm-hmm. normal now to be gay and normal to be a lesbian.
Right, right. I think a lot of young people that I've known, or people, you know, in their 20s who are gay, who maybe were taking for granted, you know, what LGBT people went through 20, 30 years ago to get some of these rights, marriage equality, you know, just to be able to walk down the street holding hands, or, you know, to feel comfortable. I think anyone who was feeling that way is changing their tune now in the United States, because it's scary. Our vice president is very opposed to any LGBT rights, women's rights, you know, normal human rights for people that aren't like him, although I don't know what he's actually really like. As far as San Francisco, I mean, yes, certainly, I think Armistead was a pioneer, someone who, as he got some notoriety, you know, came out and was part of a movement to try to have LGBT people come out too. And I think it was, on the one hand, more progressive than now. But on the other hand, two men can walk down the street holding hands. Two women can do that. People don't look twice at trans people. So I think a lot of improvements have been made, and hopefully, because people believe that they're rightfully entitled to live those lives now, hopefully that means, despite our horrible, rigid conservative administration, it's going to be hard to take those rights away.
Skipping over Donald Trump, we're left with this idea mm-hmm. as well of a logical family. It's a family that you can choose, mm-hmm. a family of like mind, and a family who love and support mm-hmm. you. What do you think of that notion of being able to choose your own family, which is something that Armistead mm-hmm. had to do, in a sense that when he moved to San Fran, he was adopted by this sort of family and formed it from the ground up.
And then that's also what happened in Tales of the City, that they've created a logical family. So I think it's a beautiful notion. I mean, I just see people resonate with that. Maybe the biggest impact of the film is the realization that it's okay to have a logical family, that it seems that almost everybody feels that to some extent. You don't have to be LGBTQ either. It could be people who don't agree politically with their families. I see people really finding meaning in that and feeling like it's okay that might be how they feel, that they may never get along with their biological family, and that it's completely acceptable to call the new people in your life who accept you. It's okay to call them family and go forward with that, and stop beating yourself up over an inability to connect with your biological family.
I think too, something that was a bit of a shocking revelation for Armistead and how crazy his life was. I think even during an interview where you were talking about Rock Hudson and his affiliation with the man and then romantic mm-hmm. encounters, maybe we could even mm-hmm. hear you as the interviewer being shocked. Were you shocked at some of the things that he was saying and that he had done in the past?
I don't think I was shocked. I just really wanted to hear it all. I'm not that easily shocked, but I want to be. So if there was anything that was going to be shocking, I definitely didn't want to miss it. So it was really fun to talk to him about his friendship. Yeah, it was like a friends with benefits, as they say, relationship with Rock Hudson. They were never a couple or anything. He doesn't like to use the word lovers, but they were friends who had sex from time to time. And of course, initially it was because Rock Hudson was such a movie star from the golden age of Hollywood. I mean, it was a little nerve-wracking for him. So it was really, you know, it's kind of a thrill to get to hear about that, you know, just and the evolution of then what eventually happened later with him wanting to, you know, out Rock Hudson also. It was sort of flip side there. And Armistead's frustration with Rock Hudson continuing to be closeted, and really that's why they stopped their friendship. Armistead was proud to be a gay man and proud to be out, and at that time when few people were out, and he didn't want to be around people that were closeted. It's really fun to hear gossip about kind of legendary golden age of Hollywood celebrities that, I mean, now there's just so many damn celebrities, and they're all just on, they're like rich families on reality shows, and who cares about that?
And he is not short of Hollywood gossip as well. There's a lot of people who feature in this film who I think everyone will recognize: Laura Linney, Olympia Dukakis, and Ian McKellen, as well as Amy Tan. Mm-hmm. I think it's an incredible lineup of people and talent that you've managed to interview, and they're such interesting conversations as well that you've recorded. So I'm so excited that we get to catch it. It's premiering in Australia at the festival, which is going down in Norton Street, and there's a few different venues around in Sydney. We'll put the full dates up online. But just lastly, my last thing, I want to know what you took from the story of Armistead. There's so many different themes that flow throughout this film, but I want to know, as an interviewer and as a director and as someone who probably lived and breathed Armistead for a number of months, if not more than that, what did you take from this film?
I really enjoyed getting to know Armistead. He is a really cool guy. I mean, I love that I get to know him through this, and it's just cool to hear this incredible life. He's sort of like a Zelig character. I mean, not, it's a pretty unusual life. I mean, sometimes people say everybody has a story, and I mean, they do, but some are really interesting and some just aren't as interesting. I mean, it doesn't make that person bad. It's just like the coincidences and things that have happened to Armistead, the people he's met, from Jesse Helms, the senator, who's like the most conservative senator ever in the United States almost, Richard Nixon, and then, you know, on to Rock Hudson. It's just so peculiar that he could have met all these people. And I guess that people can change. The huge transformation he had in, you know, let go of trying to please his father in his case. I mean, that's a big one for a lot of people, pleasing your biological family. And then that comes back to the idea of logical family. I had read that phrase and I thought that was cool, but just really living it with Armistead and seeing him really play it out and the people in his life who deeply care about him and how he cares about them, it just became more meaningful. So I guess it's really meaningful for me. So I'm
getting cut off. That's what you're doing, Jennifer Crute, director of The Untold Tales of Armistead Maupin. That is going to be screening as part of the American Essentials Film Festival. It's a bunch of independent American films, and it's kicking off in Sydney now.
Go watch a movie. If you don't want to go to the cinema that you know normally, go to a different one.
But there is a bunch of really cool films, documentaries, dramas, comedies, all sorts of good stuff. You can check it all out at americanessentials.com.au, but for that particular one, you can catch it in Sydney on Saturday night, 4:15 p.m. Saturday night, it's like
Saturday night,
it's a party, it's definitely happening. Or you can also catch it again at the same place on the 22nd of May. Just go to that site or go to 2SER.com, find out where you can look at it at.
This is all we have time for in Gay Panic. We're cutting it real fine, cutting it fine to the line.
Absolutely fine.
We'll see you next Friday at 7 o'clock. Make sure you stick around for Hardcore Classic coming up in about 25, 24, 23, 22. But to take you there, we've got some hip hop vibes on the way.
Some Lupe Fiasco.
Great.
This is. Ooh. Anyway, let's just leave you with it. 10 seconds of music.
Bye! Bye!
Stories. Ideas.